Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to episode 38 of The Runner, the first episode of 2017 and the first for quite a while. I took a long break over the Christmas and New Year period, partly because I was busy, partly because I'm a very lazy man. But I'm back now for a thermometer of a show, taking, as it will, the temperature of Liverpool moving into the second half of the season. And I've got two fine guests joining me. First up is second appearance, I believe, on The Runner. It's freelance writer for, among others, Huffington Post and Sabotage Times, Luke R. Chandley. Luke, all well?
Hello, all well, yeah, very well indeed. How about yourself?
Not too bad, thank you, not too bad. Sure. And making his Runner debut, Sam Munnery, digital sports news editor at the time. Sam, all well?
Yes, all well, thanks. Good to be on.
Thanks for coming on. Excellent. Okay, well, before we get into this, as ever, we'll do the opening question. It's a topical one, very topical, because it relates to something that happened on the day of recording. FIFA have gone mad and expanded the World Cup to 48 teams. So question to Luke and Sam is, if you could change one thing in football for the better, what would it be? And I'll start with Luke.
This one was quite easy for me to come up with. I'd just change it back to 32 teams.
Straightforward.
They change it and I go, no, sorry about that. I'm moving that, sorry.
Yeah. Interestingly, I was when I woke up and heard about this, I was like a lot of people thought, just absurd. But as I've sort of sat around the house today on my day off and listened to news bulletins, I don't think it's as crazy as I originally did. Actually, they're going to play fewer games over the same period of time. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of dud teams at the World Cup now. But I don't know. I don't think it's as mad as it is. I don't know what your view of that is, Sam. But are you sort of against it as well?
I think I was similar to you, really. I think initially, you know, I heard Infantino come up with this idea, and I thought, you know, it just sounds just like Blatter Mark 2. It just sounds like, you know, one of those madcap things that people say just to win the presidential election. But actually, I know why he's doing it. Ultimately, everything that FIFA does comes down to money. It will generate, you know, bigger sponsorship deals because you've got more pairs of eyes on the product, because that's what we call it now. So, you know, more countries involved means, you know, you can charge more money to the sponsors, and everybody at FIFA is very happy. But at the same time, I think that potentially there is a spin-off benefit that, you know, you engage more of the world in, you know, in the World Cup. And there was a game today which I thought was a great example of how the World Cup could, a larger World Cup could be a good thing. China were playing Iceland, and Iceland beat them 2-0. And Iceland have got around about a billion fewer people in their country, and God knows how much more, how much fewer football pitches and things like that. Yeah. But it just seemed an absolutely mad result when you look at the two sides of those two countries, that Iceland, are beating China. China should be pulling their weight or doing a lot better than they are. And maybe expanding the World Cup is the way to get countries like China, India, countries, you know, huge potential in terms of sort of growing the game into that sphere. And so it remains to be seen what it does. But you want those countries to be part of it and not sort of be left out in the cold all the time.
Yeah, no, fair point. I think the thing we should all remember is this probably won't happen anyway, because Donald Trump, being American president, will all be dead before the World Cup. It's meant to kick in, will happen. Is it 2026, isn't it, or something, I think?
So
we probably won't even get there on a gloomy note. So actually, Sam, I didn't ask you for your answer. What's your answer in terms of change football for the better? Have you got something in particular?
Yeah, I had a thought about it, and I sort of ruled out my obsession with how many foul throws there are and things like that. But I decided that it would actually be a lot better if we stopped allowing the third place team in the each Champions League group to drop into the Europa League. There was a time, not too distant past where the UEFA Cup was a prestigious tournament, and it wasn't seen as an inconvenience. And the way to, you know, they UEFA have gone halfway to restoring its sort of luster by allowing the winners back into the Champions League. But I think you just need to, that's halfway there, but you need to cut off that route, that sort of exit route from the Champions League into Europa League, because it immediately dumbs down the whole competition if you have a team winning it who haven't been part of the whole process right from, you know, early September or early August, depending on when you join it. So that would be what I'd change.
Yeah, no, I'm all for that. I'm with you. I've started to grow quite fond of the Europa League, not just because we got to the final last year. I do think it's actually a genuinely good competition. The only thing stopping it now being a proper tournament is the dumping of the third place teams in. I just think it takes away from its credibility a bit. But no, excellent. Two very good shouts. Well, okay, well, let's crack on with this then. So, as I said, yeah, we're just going to sort of gauge where Liverpool are really at the moment at this stage of the season. We've just ticked over the halfway point. I just want to sort of look at the team and the squad and, you know, the way ahead, because it is a very busy month coming up and it feels like a crucial month. So first of all, let's just take stock of Liverpool. So they're second in the Premier League, having taken 44 points from 20 games. Semi-finals of the League Cup. Of course, they play Southampton. They're going to play that 24 hours after we record. So we're not really going to touch on that game because it's going to anything we say will be out of date very quickly. But yeah, they have got Southampton away in the first leg of that semi-final tie on Wednesday. And they're in the third round replay of the FA Cup, of course, after that draw with Plymouth on Sunday. So compared to 12 months ago, Liverpool eighth in the Premier League 12 months ago, early January, having taken 30 points from 20 games. So they're 14 points up and 6 places better off. They'd won the first leg of their League Cup semi-final against Stoke this time last year, 1-0 at the Britannia. And they were also in the third round replay, the FA Cup, or had to play a third round replay, having drawn away Exeter. So I'll come to you, Luke. There's no doubt the team has progressed, obviously in the two cup competitions, kind of as they were, but in the league, doing far, far better. But have they exceeded expectations, your expectations in terms of how they're doing, or is it kind of par, or in fact, controversially, you could say, are they actually doing not as well as you thought they would be at this stage in the season?
No, I think exceeding expectations, to be honest with you. Last year we seemed to be where we should be. I know we had like a lot of standout results before, like this point, so obviously Chelsea and City. But I think coming into this year, I didn't expect us to be second. And in terms of the cup competitions, semi-final League Cup, yeah, that's great. And the Plymouth draw is that, and you'll probably touch on that a little bit. But it is much better. It's a much better return than last year. Both the points and where we are in the league. And I don't think you can really disagree too much with exceeding expectations, really.
Yeah, I mean, same question to you, Sam. I mean, 44 points from 20 games is... I'm pretty sure this maths, I'd have to check it to be absolutely sure, but that's kind of edging above what Leicester took to win the title last year. They won it with 81 points. So I think if Liverpool replicated their first half into the second half, they would, you know, top Leicester. They may not get, obviously, win the league because Chelsea are doing so well, but it's title winning form in the league, isn't it? Certainly.
Yeah, definitely. I think 44 points after 20 games would have had Liverpool top last season. But, you know, last season was a little bit of a freak season because so many people were underperforming. I think this season is a little bit more a return to form as far as the Premier League is concerned. But I think you really need to look at the league record as your guide and not worry too much about the cup competitions. 14 points is a massive, massive improvement. And I agree with Luke. I think expectations would have been for us to be in the top four, going into the sort of the final sort of 18 games of the season. And the fact we're second, we've scored the most goals, out of anyone in the league. Our goals conceded, okay, we've got the worst out of the top six, but 23 are only one behind, I think, Arsenal and Spurs. So, I think it's excellent. I think, have exceeded expectations. But I think the key is just try and push on and not go off the ball. The key, I think success, if we can get success in one of the cup competitions, that would be a good thing. But ultimately, it's challenging for the title. That's going to be the real measure this season.
Yeah, and I'll stick with you on this one. I think one big issue now coming up this month, as I said earlier, is how many games we've got to play. I think we played two in January already, Sunderland and Plymouth. We've got another six to go, some huge games. Man United at the weekend, which we'll touch on later. Chelsea at the end of the month. Obviously, the two legs against Southampton. Swansea at home in the league, and obviously the replay against Plymouth. So squad depth is a real issue. And going back to that Plymouth game, because that was a chance for players on the... Well, I mean, fringes, this is what we'll come on to, whether fringes is a bit harsh or not. The point to make is whether they took their chance against Plymouth. Because obviously, I mean, ultimately the result was a slightly embarrassing one. But the point I'll make to you is, the average age of that team was 21 years and 296 days. It's the youngest team in Liverpool's history, included five teenagers. I mean, should we have expected more from that bunch of players, or a 0-0 draw, given the changes, given their age, against the team doing, pretty well in League Two, who defended in, huge numbers? Was that kind of fair?
I mean, I think the team had some, some fairly established players in there, as well as some of the youngsters. And, Chan was in there, and Lucas was in there. And I think they would probably be a bit disappointed with the 0-0 draw. But, we didn't lose. We've got a replay. I'm sure they'll see it through in the replay. But I think the key is, and for Klopp, is to use the competitions like the Cups to give these guys a run out, in front of a full house at Anfield, give them experience of that, so that, if he does have to throw them into, the heat of a league game, they don't just wilt in front of the, in a sort of under pressure. So I think it was the right thing to do. You win some, you lose some. It doesn't always work out. You have to give these kids a go. Ferguson did it at United, and eventually they become accustomed to that level of playing. So in terms of squad depth, I think, it is a thin squad. And I was just writing down the match day score will be for the United game. I think, you are starting to sort of scrape around for, who's going to fill the bench. There are some talented lads there, and you look at the likes of Gerrard and Carragher when they came through. Nobody had heard of them, but you give them a chance, and you see how they sort of take the opportunity.
Yeah, we'll come on to the guys' predictions for the squad for United later. But yeah, back to you, Luke, on that Plymouth game. The stats are pretty interesting for this game. Liverpool had 77% possession. 28 shots compared to Plymouth's four. Interesting though, Liverpool only had only four shots on target. Plymouth had one, so it wasn't a huge gap there. 18 corners to zero. And another stat I saw, I'll have to verify this, but I think Kevin Stewart had more touches in the first half than the whole of the Plymouth team combined, which tells you a lot. Was there anyone who played for Liverpool, bar the obvious ones, bar the senior players, the kids in particular, who caught your eye, who you thought did pretty well?
I think Alexander-Arnold plays well. I think, and you can tell by that, because really you couldn't criticise him for anything in particular. I mean, yeah, he didn't have much defending to do, if any, to be honest. But that's kind of what you want from your defenders. If you can't really mention anything negative about them, then they're going the right way about it. So I think he did really well. They all played quite well. I think maybe it was a little early for Woodburn, in my opinion. Maybe he's shown a lot of bright sparks. I think he looked as if he was a young player, having taken the chance. But whereas the others looked like on the fringes of the senior squad, I felt anyway. But I think they all did well, and I think you got to remember they've probably never played against a team who've just literally parked the biggest bus they can find. So whereas, yeah, we're used to it against, maybe Sunderland and the likes of other teams who know, like Man United, the first time we played, well, the only time we played them so far this year, they just parked the bus, didn't they? And so it's almost like it's great experience for them to say, well, this is what happens at Premier League level. It probably doesn't happen at under 23s level. So it's a good... So although, yeah, you say, oh, we maybe shouldn't have played the youngsters, which... I disagree with that. I'm glad he played them. It'll be good for the next time that they step in and they face this, and they've kind of had that experience already. So I think in general, it'll do all of them really, really well. But for Alexander Arnold, for me, did well. Looked just really composed, and looked like a player who could kind of come in. You know, if Klein got a little injury or even a big injury, I think he'd come in and do a good job, I reckon.
Yeah, no, I've been very impressed with Alexander. I'll just come back to you, Sam. You said in passing that you think they'll get the job done at Plymouth. I mean, my worry here is, it's not really a worry because I'm not too bothered about the FA Cup this year. So I think we need to focus on the league, and obviously the League Cup's going well. But I think if he plays the same team at Plymouth, there's a big chance Plymouth are going to win that game, aren't they? I mean, I don't know if I'm being pessimistic there.
I mean, I don't think it'll be quite the same team. I think he'll use a slightly larger hammer to crack the nut this time. But yeah. I think, you know, there will be a few youngsters in there. But I think he'll realise that, you know, Plymouth aren't pushovers. The benefit I think we'll get at Plymouth is that they won't be able to play the way they did against at Anfield. There'll be the temptation to move forward a bit and, you know, to try and attack Liverpool. And it's almost the worst thing they could do. Because they managed to sit back, you know, hold us out. But I think, on home turf, the crowd will expect to see a little bit of them on the ball and things like that. So the spaces will open up. And, you know, I think it, with a little bit more luck, we could have won the first game. But I think he'll throw a bit more experience into the team. And I think that should be enough. But you don't want to count your chickens.
No, we should say that game's on Wednesday, 18th of January, so a week tomorrow. We're recording this on Tuesday. I think the fortunate thing about it comes before the Swansea League game, so he could probably play a few and then he could even rest a couple for the Swansea game on the basis that they're utter dross, although I'm probably jinxing that now awfully. But OK, let's sort of talk about the kids a bit more in the context of off the first team. As I said, lots of games to play and Liverpool... it is a really tricky time. They've obviously lost Sadio Mane to the Africa Cup of Nations. Coutinho's on his way back, could well play against Southampton on Wednesday, but isn't 100% fit. Joel Matip has been struggling with injuries for quite a while. Let's expect a couple of other players will pick up knocks or need a rest. So the Plymouth replay aside, I'll come to you on this, Luke. Would you be comfortable with any of the kids you saw on Sunday starting any of the first team Premier League EFL Cup games coming up?
I think the one I didn't mention was Ojo. I think I'd be pretty comfortable with him starting if he tomorrow especially if he started out wide. I wouldn't have any issues. I'd almost overlook it, as if I feel like he has got enough quality. As I said before, Alexander Arnold, I wouldn't be concerned. Obviously, I'll have my little eye on it, but I think I'd be perfectly happy with him starting. Again, Ajari, as long as there was, you know, a couple of, say if he was in the centre three, as long as a couple of experienced players, I'd be kind of perfectly happy for him to start as well. So I think most of them. I mean, I don't expect Woodburn to kind of get a start in the Prem, you know, this year, and probably not in the EFL Cup, with knowing how far through we are with it. But I almost feel like that's not even a problem. You know, he's not expected to start these games. He started as like a bonus on Sunday. So I'd be fairly happy with kind of all of them who started on Sunday, like with the exception of Woodburn starting in the league or in the EFL Cup, providing there was enough experience around them as well.
Yeah, I should say on Klein, he's the only Liverpool player to play start every league game this year. He's 20 starts. Jordan Henderson's 19, Mane's 19, Milner 18, Firmino, I should say, 19 as well, Wijnaldum 16, and then Lovren 17. There's quite a few on 12 as well. But I mean, Klein looks an absolute top-level athlete, but I'd suggest he may need a rest at some point. So, Alexander-Arnold could well come in. Maybe Swansea could be the ideal game. I'll stick with you on this one, Luke, then. So, January transfer window is open. We've spoken quite well about the kids. The first team is obviously looking very good, but I think we all agree the squad is looking slightly thin. Would you want Klopp to go out in the next couple of weeks and buy anyone?
Maybe. I think what I don't want to do is say, I think we can almost touch wood. We can almost presume that Champions League football of some kind will probably be at Anfield next year. But what I wouldn't want to do is go and buy a player who we need for the next 6 months and then have a problem when we want to try and kind of upgrade in the summer if we're in the Champions League. So I think we could possibly do with maybe another forward, like another a striker. Origi is, he scored goals, but I think his performances have just been a little bit below par. Or is it above par? The bad one, anyway.
It's below.
I'm not a golf fan. so I think with that in mind, obviously Ings is out, and I partially expect Ings maybe to go on loan next year. With it being like nearly 2 years out, I think we could possibly, if we could get like a high quality striker in, who kind of has the work rate, who has the legs, then yeah. But I think other than that, in my opinion, kind of the whole that the rest of the squad doesn't seem too bad for this time of year, in my opinion. So I'd kind of only go with a striker if we could.
Just on Origi, it's interesting that I'm just looking at his stats here. He went on a 5-game scoring streak. So he scored in 5 consecutive games against Sunderland in the league, then Leeds, then Bournemouth, then West Ham, Middlesbrough. He hasn't scored in his last 5. I'm quite a big fan of Origi. I think he's really progressed to Liverpool. But it's interesting. I went to the Stoke game just after Boxing Day, the Tuesday after Boxing Day. I was in the car with a couple of guys and hadn't seen him for a while. And they'd been to the Everton game and been to the Middlesbrough game, and which had come just before. And they were absolutely slating him. They were saying, if you watch him up close, he's really lazy. His movement's poor off the ball. He seems to sort of blow up around 70 minutes. You know, his energy levels just fall off a cliff. And it's all really took me back, really. But it's essentially, you just said there about, well, the below par thing about his performances. Are you someone as well who's got doubts about Origi then? Because so this is taking me by surprise a little bit. I've been a huge fan of his quite a while.
No, to be honest, I am a fan, and I'm not kind of someone who would like overly criticise him. I mean, he is essentially a young player, but I just think some of his touches, some of his control of the ball has been a little off. So whereas like I wouldn't kind of, you know, get rid of him at all. I really think he's going to be a great player for us in the future. I just think some of his performances that came with his 5-game goal scoring streak kind of weren't that great. But I think like it's not something I'm necessarily concerned with, and I think this, you know, just happens. You know, he's not getting, until then he wasn't really getting a run of games. You know, his fitness probably wasn't at its peak. I just kind of think it's one of them things. He'll grow into it. You know, his touch will get better, and I actually don't think he's lazy at all. I think when he's up top on his own, I think he is regularly the player to close down the keeper in the way that we don't see Sturridge doing. Kind of to the same acceleration, the same speed. So I don't really agree with the lazy shout, but I just think it's his touch a little bit and kind of his decision making, which just kind of comes with time. I mean, is he 20, 21?
Yeah, 21, I believe. Yeah, still so, very young. Yeah.
So I think it'll just come. Like, I'm not at all concerned. It's just, I think we could do with someone else if he's having an off day and kind of maybe Sturridge is injured, because I think Firmino looks a little bit shattered, so I think we could do with a little, you know, someone else there. Like,
yeah, I mean, I thought she was saying that Stoke game. I thought Ryu was very good. So, same question to you, Sam, on the transfer situation. Do you or would you like Liverpool to buy anyone this window?
I think it's been a long thing of mine. I think we need another left back. For me, looking at the team, losing Milner could be absolutely disastrous.
True.
You know, if we were without him for 4 or 5 games and we had to play Moreno, I'd just be watching every game through my fingers, because I just Moreno is obviously the will is there, but the ability just isn't. And Milner's really carved himself out as a very good left back. So I think we need cover for Milner. It's a shame, really, that Flanagan is on loan at Burnley, because I think he would fit the bill perfectly. But he's there for the season, so we can't worry too much about that. So, I mean, I really see if there is a short-term loan, a sort of second half of the season loan we could do to bring somebody in as cover for Milner, the quality cover for Milner, I think that would be what I would be looking at, and just purely focus on that. I think all the other areas of the team, we're obviously scoring enough goals. We've got 48 goals in the league. So that's not a problem. I think the defence is getting quite settled. So I think, yeah, look for a short-term deal on a loan, whether that's from abroad. I don't think anyone will loan anyone from the Premier League, so because we'd be looking for the sort of quality that our title rivals have got. But yeah, that would be where I'd try and strengthen, definitely left back. I think on Origi, I just wanted to say that, you know, all strikers have dry periods. He is young. Young players go through that. You know, Sterling had a bit of a downturn. Rodgers dropped in for a bit. Then he came back and he was very, very good. So I think Origi, I mean, I'm looking at Ibrahimovic's stats from this season. He scored one goal in 11 games. And this is Ibrahimovic we're talking about. Mm. So they all have these dry patches. And I don't, especially for young players, I think, you know, you're going to have to accept that they'll have hot patches and cold patches. So I think like Luke said, what Origi gives you, he gives you plenty of effort. He, you know, he leads the line very well, keeps the defenders on the opposite team honest. So I think, you know, he will come good. Perhaps he needs just a little bit of a rest, but unfortunately, just because of the depth of the squad at the moment, we haven't got the luxury to do that.
Yeah, no, he's spot on with all that. I'm a big fan of Origi, and I was surprised when my friends on the way up to Anfield were sort of slagging him off. But there you go. Just on the chance things, come back to you on this, Luke. I mean, Klopp has spoken consistently about his reluctance to spend money for the sake of it, certainly this window. I mean, one thing I'll throw in there, I'm sort of with him on that one. I think he's a coach who's proven that he's somebody who works very well with players in terms of developing them. He did it at Dortmund, he's done it at Liverpool, or he's doing it at Liverpool. But I would suggest sometimes it's almost worth just signing a player just for the sake of it. You know, just boosts your squad. It's, you know, gives the fan base a bit, you know, a boost as well. It maybe strikes a bit of fear into your rivals as well if they see a, you know, a big name sort of landing at one of their clubs. And I mean, just to throw a name in there, for instance, Alexandre Lacazette. I think Leon of sort of throwing him his name around, his the Leon owner was saying that bids have come in for him. It sounds like they're trying to get a bidding war going. Would you sort of back a kind of signing for the sake of it, almost this window, a big name just to come in? Obviously someone who could play as well, someone who would, you know, I think Sam said, you know, a striker wouldn't be the worst thing in the world as well, but just someone who could give just a name, just give everyone a boost at the club. And as I said, strike a bit of fear into the rivals.
I don't think I would, but I think I'd like it if we did. Like, I can't see him going out there, and because the big name is going to come with a big fee, and I just kind of unless it's someone that he's earmarked and the players become available, I think he'd probably splash, you know, with limits, kind of whatever was needed. But I wouldn't. But I think it'd be, and just kind of putting my fan hat on here, it would be exciting, wouldn't it? Because we don't tend to get in big names. We make big names, and then obviously they move on to, you know, teams like Barcelona, for example. I think it'd just be really good fun, wouldn't it, to have like someone who you'd gone like, Christ, he's like absolutely, he's like smashing them in France or wherever, or, you know, Italy or wherever, and it'd be good fun. I mean, Balotelli wasn't great fun, but, you know, there's something similar to that. The name, it was exciting, wasn't it? And that could just give, you know, everyone a boost, you know, for the 6 months or for the next few months, and kind of push us through February and March. So whereas I'd really like it. I kind of like it if we did. It's kind of like a oxymoron, really. But I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, I should say with Lacazette, he's the second top scorer in Ligue 1 in France. He's got 13 goals, one assist. Edison Cavani, top scorer, 18 goals. And on Balotelli, he's actually doing well there. But looking down the list of top scorers, he's got 8. So he's getting a lot of publicity over at Nice. But eight's not terrible in how many ever games he's played, but it's not as good as I thought it was. Same question to you, really, then, Sam. I mean, as I said, the signing for the sake of it, it's a short-term strategy, but given how tight the push for the title, the push for the top four is, it could be something that just gets Liverpool over the line, couldn't it?
Yeah, potentially. I think, you know, your impact signings tend to be strikers. Now, I don't think that necessarily is our problem at the moment, and isn't going to be a problem for the rest of the season. We got goals coming from so many different points in the team. Almost no other team in the Premier League has that. They're all kind of relying on one or two players. So I wouldn't buy one for the sake of it. I don't think the fan base need the boost. I think we're all feeling quite optimistic about the second half of the season. Every game that, you know, that Liverpool play, I think we're all fancying them to get a good result out of it at the moment. I think that's a really good place. So I would be very wary about unsettling the squad with a signing. But if there is value and if there is a deal to be had out there, then you know we shouldn't be sniffy about it, because as you say, it might be the thing that makes the difference. You know, I know James Rodriguez at Real Madrid is, he's not getting very many games, and there's been a bit of talk that 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 he might be looking for a move, whether it's a short term or a long term move. So it might be worth sounding out Real, seeing if they'll let us take him for 6 months or whatever. And just it might be the thing that makes a difference, especially if any of our strikers pick up injuries on the run in. So I think it's definitely worth asking the question, but I don't think we should be afraid of walking away from deals and saying it's all right, it's not the one for us at the moment. But I think we should definitely be out there making inquiries.
Yeah, just on your point about goals, yeah, Liverpool got 12 different goal scorers in the Premier League this season, which is fantastic, really. As you say, not relying on anyone in particular. Top scorer is Mane, I believe, in 9. Yeah, that's right. But yeah, 12 different goal scorers, which is great. Should say as well, for anyone who's forgotten, it was this window last year that Liverpool arguably made their maddest ever signing, which when they signed Stephen Colker on loan and played him as a striker. I mean, there was a heady times, I think we'll all agree. Brilliant. Okay, well, let's assess the squad. Let's assess the players we have got a little bit. Just break it down into the various areas. So we'll start in the obvious place, goalkeeper. Simple question for you, Luke. Happy that Mignolet's back as our number one?
This is the hardest question.
it is, isn't it?
Yeah, I think happy is probably the wrong word, but I'm content with where we're at right now with it. It seems to be... I think it's quite hard, isn't it, to kind of judge what's happening last game, this game, and going forward, as opposed to remembering that he did have some bad games for us. But at the moment, things seem to look quite steady. I want to say that I say that really tenuously, because I'm scared that it'll jinx it. But I think for now, the boat seems to be a bit settled. Long term, I'm not massively happy, but for now, as long as we've got a steady keeper, then that's all I'm fussed about.
Yeah, I think your nervousness speaks for an entire fan base there. Sam, it looks like Karius has essentially become Liverpool's cup keeper. He played against Plymouth. I think Klopp said he'll play against Southampton on Wednesday. Is this really what you've done in the first place, perhaps? And obviously, it's a lot of hindsight there, but maybe just kept him. Because when Mignolet was dropped, he was actually doing quite well. I mean, I'm like Luke, I'm not his biggest fan, but he was doing quite well, in fairness. Maybe it would have been better just to keep Karius in the cup games and let him bed in that way.
I think what Klopp's done, and actually the way it's panned out, has been really good. I think what we have with Mignolet now is we seem to have a more confident goalkeeper. He seemed to have a massive loss of confidence. There were several sort of basic things he wasn't, being able to do. The communication wasn't good. He was dropping crosses. He wasn't being sort of dominant enough in his penalty area. But I think now he's had that period out of the team. He's realised he now has competition, and he's come back into it with sort of a renewed focus. So I think actually it was the right thing to put Karius in the first place, to give Mignolet that's sort of shake to his confidence, if you like, and just sort of buck his ideas up. And I think now Mignolet might be the better keeper, but I think the way Klopp's done it, it's actually trained Mignolet's focus a little bit more than you would have done had you just had Karius sitting there on the bench. Because otherwise, I think there's a danger he could have thought, oh, this is just another backup goalkeeper, this is just another Brad Jones or whoever. So I think actually it's worked out quite well. Karius is a good goalkeeper. He's very young. Like Mignolet, he's probably got to go through a learning phase as well. So, but I think you've got a goalkeeper in him that you wouldn't be totally afraid of bringing in. But with Mignolet, you do have several reservations about it as well. He maybe needs to learn. They all have little patches where they have to come through.
Yeah, well, I'll stick with you on this one. Hypothetical situation. You wake up tomorrow morning, you stick your telly on, Sky Sports News perhaps, and you hear that Liverpool are, I can't think of a name off the top of my head, but Liverpool are heavily, strongly linked with a new goalkeeper who's going to be their number one. Would you instantly be happy?
It depends who it is, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I think, if it's, I don't know, say if it's something like Joe Hart. Look, I mean, Joe Hart made plenty of mistakes for England in the summer, so... He's not going to be the perfect tonic for us either. I would be a little sadness, I think, would be more for Mignolet, because he's sort of fought his way back into the team. He's played well, and you think he now deserves a bit of a run to sort of bed himself down as back in as number one. I think it would be a little bit of a shame for Karius, but then he could look back on some of his performances and say, maybe that's fair. I think you look at Man City and what they did with Hart, and it does show that, you know, sometimes the grass isn't always greener on the other side, because, you know, they bring in Bravo. I don't really think he's any better than Hart in many ways. I think he might be a slightly weaker goalkeeper for the Premier League. So I think you sort of need to, it's one of those, you need to be careful what you wish for. It needs to be, if it was a new goalkeeper, it needs to be somebody who is a tangible improvement on Mignolet. And, you know, if that goalkeeper isn't out there, then, you know, I wouldn't be averse to carrying on with him. Yeah, he's going to make mistakes, but everybody makes mistakes. Yeah, it's unfortunate that United and Spurs have probably got two of the best goalkeepers in the world. So it kind of throws everybody else's goalkeeper into a slightly sort of unfair light, perhaps.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think, yeah, I mean, that is one issue, isn't it? The standard of the keepers are our rivals. I mean, you look back and think, God, if we'd maybe made a bid for Petr Cech at the time, you know, and got him to Arsenal, that could have been a fantastic signing. But never mind. Well, Luke, back to you. I mean, let's look at the back four then. Again, I'll ask you quite a straightforward question. Do we have a settled back four?
Yeah, I think pretty much. I think it's probably, in terms of how you could guess our team would line up, it's probably the most kind of consistent one, in terms of you could just rack it off, couldn't you? I mean, Klein, you said it before, he's brilliant, isn't he? He is a right back. I think he's better than Walker. I'm not Walker's biggest fan, but I mean, he's made improvements, but I think Klein's better. Matip seems like a really good signing. I mean, I know, I think it's unfair to get too negative on Karius and maybe too positive on Matip, but, you know, he's done really well, hasn't he? So if he can continue like this, he's going to be our first. Well, he is our first choice, but he's going to continue to be our first choice. Lovren, okay, fine. I'm kind of happy with him. And Milner, as Sam said before, Milner's going to be hopefully continue to be our left back, and he's just made a really good job of it. I'd kind of like to see Klavan come in, and possibly instead of Lovren. And I don't know in terms of sides and right side and left side how that would work, but I think Klavan has been, it's hard to say one of our best signings, but a really solid acquisition. Like, you know, he's not made too many mistakes, and he's that kind of drop of the shoulder he does and then plows on into midfield. I love it. He's just, he seems a lot better than your average third choice centre back, really. And I quite like to see him given a chance over Lovren, to kind of see how it happens. But in terms of the back four, as we wouldn't know it, I'm fairly happy with that. I'm pretty sure it's pretty settled.
Yeah, interesting. I was just checking here, actually, about the height thing, because I always get the sense Klavan's maybe a bit shorter than Lovren. But I mean, Lovren's 6'2", and I'm pretty sure Klavan's the same height, according to Soccer Base. Yeah, 6'2" as well. So, yeah, Klavan always looks a bit shorter to me, but I think they're about the same height. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think he's done really well. I was sceptical after a couple of early performances, but I think certainly the Derby and I think the Stoke game as well, he played pretty well. So, yeah, no, I think it's a decent shout. Sam, let's come on to Milner. You were bigging up before. He has done well, Greedy. I think he's been very solid. He was man of the match, wasn't he, against Man City, I think, on New Year's Eve. Could he be Liverpool's long-term left-back?
I don't see any reason why not. You know, he's obviously a midfielder who can play very intelligently, so he knows what to do at left-back. I mean, I think what makes him a good left-back is he's got very good positional sense. He's quick. He works very hard. He's good on the ball. He's not like Moreno, who is not particularly comfortable in possession and sort of hurries to get rid of it. Milner's very comfortable in everything he does. And he's one of those players, you know, that you could slot in most places and he would do a good job. Long-term, I would like a specialist left-back long-term, and so that it can free Milner up to do other things in the team. And then we can have Milner as a very, very, very good option to come in and be backup at left back. But, you know, this brings me back to my obsession with Flanagan. And I think, you know, I think he needs to be given a chance. But, I think for the time being, you know, if you said to me Milner's going to be our left back for the next 18 months, I wouldn't be against that, really. I think he's doing a fine job. It's by far the least of our problems with him at left back, and thinking the team. So it's just the main problem is who comes in if it's not him.
Yeah. So do you think Liverpool made a mistake loaning out Flanagan in at the start of the season?
Yeah, massively. I think the problem was Flanagan was obviously unfit. He'd been out for a long time. Perhaps Klopp felt that the best way to get him match fit was to loan him out. I think the mistake possibly was to make it a season long loan, whereas we could have gone for a half season and brought him back now. I don't think he's played a full half season for Burnley. I think he sort of came back in kind of October time. So it's a bit of a shame. But what I do hope is that Klopp gives him the opportunity in the summer to come back and kind of force his way back into the team. There's no doubt he's got the ability. Absolutely no doubt about that. But I just think he needs the chance, and he just needs the confidence of Klopp, really. So I think the summer's going to be key for him.
Yeah, I was just trying to check if actually how much he's played. He's made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 appearances for Burnley. One in the EFL Cup, 90 minutes there. He played came off the bench against Everton in October. Came off the bench against Man United also in October. Started 90 minutes against Palace in November. 81 minutes against Stoke in December, and then Middlesbrough on Boxing Day. He finished the whole game. So he's getting minutes under his belt. I'm like you, I'm a John Flanagan fan. I thought in that 13-14 season he was great. You know, he's quite a basic player, isn't he? But I thought he did his job very well. And I think we are looking quite short at left back. And that's where he played, obviously, in that season as well, didn't he, as well?
I'll take basic over Moreno.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all agree with that. Most people do. Let's move on to the midfield then. Back to you, Luke. The midfield, I've been really impressed with this season. I think it's functioning really well. It does seem now, Henderson's obviously the captain and done really well in that number six role. Lallana's been fantastic. Does it really then come down to those two plus one of Wijnaldum and Chan? And if so, who's the one that you're tending to side with?
I think it does come down to them two, Wijnaldum and Chan. It's pretty nailed on that. Obviously, Henderson will start, and he's been doing really well in the kind of the deep lying role. And Lallana is just Lallana, isn't he? He's fantastic almost every game. I'd choose Wijnaldum. I like the three of the energy with the three of them. And whereas Henderson kind of isn't as pressing as he has been previously, that energy that they all bring together, I really like it. Because with Lallana and Wijnaldum kind of in front of him, kind of pressing, Wijnaldum's strength's incredible. It's just something I didn't know he had in his locker, you know, before he came. I don't know what I expected, but I didn't expect this type of like cool, classy, strong on the ball, neat football player. And that's what we've got. And I've got just some slight concerns over Chan, but again, nothing major as he is quite young. So I'd kind of choose Wijnaldum, Lallana and Henderson all together in the centre.
Yeah, what about you on that one, Sam?
Yeah, I'd go with Wijnaldum. I think he's, when we signed him from Newcastle, there was a lot of people sort of sniggering, saying, I think, you know, they've overpaid for him, and Newcastle, you know, be laughing all the way to the bank. I actually think he's proved them all wrong. He does look a classy player. He almost looks like our answer to Fernandinho, except without the rash of red cards that he's had this season. So he's reliable, and, you know, he gets himself in positions. The goal against Man City sort of showed that. He's not averse to sort of reading the game and spotting an opportunity to move forward. But he's very disciplined, does his job very well. I think it's nice to have him there, because I think he's almost a player that I think Chan could become in maybe a season or two, just because he has that extra discipline that Chan sometimes lacks, the sort of focus and they're going to stick to this job and do this job for the whole game. I think that's where sort of Chan could learn a few things. But no, I think I would go for him if I was picking an ideal first 11.
Yeah, I mean, I've been sceptical about Wijnaldum for quite a while. I've started to be converted into seeing that merit in particular of him being selected over Chan. One thing I'd say, that I'll stick with you on this, Sam, is I do think end product from him is quite weak. I mean, he's got 2 goals and 16 starts this season. Chan has got 3 and 9. I mean, I'd suggest when you find someone play for £25 million, they need to be a bit more than neat and tidy. And he's an attacking midfielder. He needs to get more goals, doesn't he?
I mean, you could make that case for him getting a few more goals. But I think the goals are coming from elsewhere, so it's almost kind of papering over the fact that, you know, he's not scoring the goals. He's doing other jobs very well. So it's not a major concern for me. I think we didn't buy him to score us lots of goals this season. I mean, he scored a few for Newcastle, but then nobody else was scoring them for Newcastle. But then I think I'd like to see a bit more of that from him. But I think over this course of the season, he's been feeling his way in. And the first few months, you know, he was not particularly impressive. Not bad, but not impressive either. But I think as time's gone on, he started to grow into the team a little bit in the same way that Lallana did. You know, Lallana started off a little bit nervously, maybe with the size of the transfer fee. Similar thing perhaps with Wijnaldum. He's sort of feeling his way into the team. And I think he now feels he belongs a little bit. I mean, obviously you have to ask him, but he looks the part a little bit more now. And I think the goals will come. But if you've got Lallana, Coutinho, Mane, Sturridge, Firmino ahead of him, he's just, inevitably you're going to give the ball to them because they're going to do the damage. So I've got no problem with him doing that.
No, absolutely fair enough. And let's move on to the attack. Back to you, Luke. How do we fill the Sadio Mane shaped hole? Because it's a massive one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I don't know if we fill it. Well, we definitely don't fill it directly without bringing a replacement in. I think maybe kind of starting maybe two up top. And almost a diamond behind them because we haven't got that player who can kind of do what he does, because it's not just the speed, it's kind of the quickness in his mind, it's the way, you know, because I think we saw it, seen it a few times, and I can't quite remember what goal it was now, where he can get the ball and kind of fizz it past the player and then catch up with the ball. So he's almost taken that lad out of the game already. So it's not just he's really fast, he's good at football. So I think maybe like kind of starting two up top. Obviously you've got Origi and Sturridge, Sturridge stays fit, Origi stays fit, I don't know. And then even then you've got like Firmino. So I think it's kind of just changing the shape a bit, because I'm a bit unsure whether, obviously we kind of started off like a battering ram in terms of we were battering people, and that's gone off the boil a little bit. Whether maybe we're kind of being found out slightly, changing things up might be a good thing for our attack and play anyway. So it kind of could come as like a blessing in disguise. And then again, you bring back in, obviously, Mane at the end of January or whenever he comes back. And you've kind of got two directions going with two different formations. So I kind of think maybe just changing things. Because obviously just to bring it back to Suarez, like I always do, but we tried to play the same way and it just wasn't going to happen. So why try? Maybe just go to something else, you know. So kind of that's my feeling. Maybe we don't fill the hole. Maybe we kind of create a whole new pattern without that hole in there.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting shout. And I'll stick with you on this one because it leads on to the next question. Because I think, Coutinho obviously might come back soon, but I think someone in the attacking line who's really struggling in the current shape is Roberto Firmino, I should say. Obviously, when Coutinho got injured, he was moved out to the left. Origi came through the middle, and he just hasn't looked the same player as him. He's got one goal in his last 10 games. He looks either injured or very tired. He's off the pitch issues as well, the drink driving thing. I think I read today his house got burgled as well. I mean, he's going through a really tough time. I mean, the obvious thing is either give him a rest, give him a break, or change a system, you know, change the shape a bit so he becomes a bit more of a focal point perhaps.
Yeah. He has got off the boil, but he's always putting in the hard yards. And there's got to be a point where you do think, all right, you know, maybe Lallana can do it like twice in 2 days and kind of, you know, maybe not affect him too much. But players react differently, and maybe he just needs, you know, maybe a week, 2 weeks. And obviously with the off the field issues, that's not ideal for him. I know the drink driving was his fault, but it happened, so that we're in that situation. So I think maybe, you know, with a change of formation, we could give him a rest and still kind of, because in my opinion, I'd like to see him maybe, if we change formation, behind the two strikers, so he's kind of still central. He doesn't offer pace, but then you don't really need pace, you know, that much in that area of the field. So I'd maybe do that, but it's either a rest or put him in like in maybe a new formation, because keeping him central is ideal. And maybe if you if you play that diamond, you could kind of split the two forwards, and then you'd still see Firmino coming through the middle, pressing and attacking. So that's kind of my idea, maybe. But yeah, he does look tired, doesn't he?
Yeah, no, that's a very good shout. And yeah, maybe going to a diamond, him at the tip of the diamond behind the front two. And Sam, one player who could benefit from Mane's departure, and that, you know, if Luke's suggestion of a new shape was implemented, is Daniel Sturridge. He's fit. I thought he looked quite sharp against Plymouth when he came on. And this feels like a really crucial month for him, I think, in terms of his long-term future. If he doesn't get game time this month, then I don't think he'll stay beyond the end of the season anyway. But certainly if he's not getting game time this month with so many games, with Mane away, then he never will he?
No, I mean, this absolutely right. I think, you know, this is absolutely massive month for Sturridge. This is the month, you know, I think Klopp is well aware of his talent. I just think he wants to see the kind of the application and the hunger to go with it. And I think this is, yeah, it's a massive month. He needs to prove that he's, you know, he's the plan B. He's, you know, if Mane's not around or if he's injured, then he can come in and he can still score the goals. So, if I was him, I'd be saying to Klopp, right, I want to start the games, I want to start the league games. I'll be, you know, your number one man up front. But he needs to put the shift in. But I think this is ideal. It's a situation that's been created. I think it will force Klopp's hand to play him, because, as you know, with Firmino, you know, off the ball, I think this is, you know, he's got no choice really to throw him in there. And he's fit. He's not often been fit, so let's give him a go. He's the one. He's very few players who can make something from nothing in our squad and in the Premier League as well. And Sturridge can score you any type of goal. So I think let's get him in there and let's give him the opportunity to make his case.
Yeah, I mean, remarkably, he's still only completed 90 minutes once this season, which was the League Cup game against Spurs, which, as you say, he's generally been fit this year. I think he was injured at the start of the season, had an injury recently, but... Yeah, I mean, he probably would have completed 90 minutes against Sunderland, perhaps on the 2nd of January, but that is pretty startling. So I'll stick with you, Sam. You sort of nodded towards this earlier. There's the team for Man United, huge game on Sunday, obviously, at Old Trafford. There's only 5 points gap between us now. It was far bigger than that. Only felt like a little while ago, but they have been winning in quite a relentless way, and it is a tight gap now. Given the games that are coming, given the size of this game, what's your team for Old Trafford?
Well, I think the back five kind of picks itself really. Mignolet, Klein, Lovren, Clavin, Milner. The midfield was the real tricky one, really, because Coutinho. I think Coutinho sounds like he might start on the bench against Southampton. I know this is going to go out of after that game takes place, but I think for the United game, he might not be 100% fit and ready to start. We'll have to see how it goes. But if he isn't, I think that probably gives Chan an opportunity to start. Henderson, Wijnaldum probably slightly ahead of him, and then you've just got Lallana. For me, Lallana sort of floating around behind Firmino and Sturridge. I think if Coutinho is fit, if he is ready to start, then I think you put him in, but he could be a useful impact sort of substitute in the second half if we need to change things or if we need to chase the game.
Yeah, we should say, obviously, a real key point to make is we're going on the basis that nobody gets injured against Southampton on Wednesday. So on the basis that there's no fresh injuries. So, on that basis. Same question to you, Luke.
The defence or the back five, it does pick itself, doesn't it? Is Matip fit for that or no?
Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest. Yeah, I'm sort of confused in terms of where we are with Matip. I think he's fit.
It doesn't sound good.
He's not ready. Yeah.
Ah, okay. The same back five. And although I'm clearly trying to push this diamond, I've actually gone with it again. So I think maybe Henderson. Do we know what's going on with Henderson? Is he back for the game on Sunday?
I think he should be all right. But again, I could be wrong, but I think he might be fine because it wasn't same ankle that he's had major problems with. So I think he should be okay, I think.
Yeah, I think the plan was to rest him this week and then so that he's ready for United. I think that seems to be the received wisdom, I think.
Okay, well, I've gone with Henderson deep, and then I've gone Lallana and Wijnaldum, and Firmino. I have put him at the tip of the diamond with Sturridge and Origi ahead, because I think we do need like a lot of energy in midfield, mainly because Carrick isn't offering that, and that could be that could be a big thing for us, I think. And you know, Ibrahimovic isn't exactly going to kind of break the offside trap or anything, so I just think that midfield, getting in and around him and Carrick, the kind of obviously the each end of the pitch, will be a big deal. And with the energy that Firmino and especially Origi, like I said earlier, I think that could be a big win for us with the diamond. But it's hard to second guess. It then depends who's fit. If Coutinho, and I've left Coutinho out there because I thought I'd quite like to see him come on, because I think if it's a draw, or you know, they're knackered because they can't play the way that they played against, you know, they played against us at Anfield because they're at home. I think that the sight they wouldn't want to see coming off the bench on 75 minutes or 70 minutes is someone as good as Coutinho. And I think that's having him on the bench, they know he's going to come on at some point. So they're going to be almost thinking, well, when is he going to come on and what is he going to do when he come on? And you know, we can't give free kicks away around the area. We can't do this, can't do that. And I think it just puts that element of doubt that we've got someone coming who's brilliant and you've got to deal with him when he comes. And I think, and again, that is, I think that's quite exciting and could be a big thing for us, because they're going to be mentally tired. You know, they're going to expend a lot of energy because we do. So they're going to have to maybe not match that, but they've got to come quite close. So I just think a lot of energy to start with, and then bring on Coutinho. Kind of maybe if we need a goal, I'll just bring him on anyway. Just why not bring him on? We've got him.
Makes sense. Oh, well, I'll ask you this question first, Luke. Would you take a draw at Old Trafford?
No, I don't think it was. No. I was thinking about it before, and I know. Yeah, it's away from home, and Man United are getting good, but I think a win against them, people have been slowly starting to talk about them again. You know, they're starting to play well because they're good. You know, I mean, I know they didn't play too well earlier, but they've as a whole, they've got a good team. I think to kind of push them back down a bit and push, you know, continue with a decent-ish run for us could be a really, really big boost. And obviously it's United, so everyone wants to win. So to kind of say, you know, people are talking about you, but you know, jog on. I think that'll be really, really good for us, and it'll probably be a kick in the teeth for them after their recent improvements.
Yeah, well, it does feel like a big weekend. Chelsea away at Leicester, which, you know, they are the champions, so that could be a tough game for them. Tottenham at home to West Brom, who are a bit of a bogey team for them. City have got Everton away, so, I mean, Everton are up and down, but that could be tricky for them. Let me just quickly check who Arsenal have got, because I didn't check that earlier. They've got Swansea away, so that's probably 3 points. So it does feel like something, you know, there could be a lot of shifting around. This could be quite a big weekend. Same question to you, Sam. Win? Will you take a draw? Is it all out for the win?
Yeah, I think I might take a draw. Just Luke saying there about, you know, United really coming good. They're still 5 points behind us, and they have to win it. I mean, it is a must win game, because you know, they won't have another crack at us again for the rest of the season. So if they don't win it, that's they're going to have to hope those 5 points, are dropped somewhere else, and that they don't drop, you know, similarly drop points. So I wouldn't be too disappointed with the draw. I think, you know, obviously if you win, you know, you're eight points ahead, and that's pretty much United dead and buried as far as we're concerned. And it would check this sort of uplift that they've had. Which would be excellent. We've got a good record against our title rivals. We haven't lost Touchwood. We haven't lost a game, you know, to any of them this season. So you know, we seem to have no problem getting up for these massive games. So that's a positive to cling on to. But if I woke up in the morning and it was, you know, if it was 0-0 or 1-1, I wouldn't be too disappointed with it. I'd obviously absolutely love to win. I think that it would really set us in good stead. But it's really United that have to win the game. So I think we should look to sort of put the pressure on them, make them come to us, and then I mean, what we're good at is counter attacking. It's almost like the perfect scenario for us.
Yeah, I mean, my big fear is Wayne Rooney's going to break Bobby Charlton's goal scoring record against us on Sunday. I'm hoping he scores against Hull tonight in the League Cup and gets out of the way. That would be marvellous. Excellent. Okay, well, before I let the guys go, I just want to touch on their various the various work at the moment, the various things they're doing. And Luke, I want to come to you first, because last time you were on, it was August. We'd just been Arsenal 4-3. It was hot. Yep. It was a bit mad. It was a crazy time. And you were at that time Sunshine magazine off the ground. First edition has gone live. I was delighted to be involved in it. Had a piece in there. Do you just want to talk about the process with that? Because ultimately, am I right, it was online only. When we spoke in August, or when you were in the pod in August, it was going to be a print publication, but it went online only. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It just turns out that doing it online is much easier to start with. And in terms of gauging like feedback and whatnot, it's an easier thing to start with. And obviously, when we last spoke, I hadn't gone full-time freelance, and now I have. So it's kind of like, you know, cutting back money where it's needed and stuff. And to be fair, online is easier to share around, kind of, it's just much easier. So it went over from print to online. The long-term goal is to still get it out to print. That's still what I want. I think I really like myself picking up a magazine and looking through a magazine and reading things. The physical aspect of it is one of the most important, but I think in terms of just where I'm at and where we're all at in terms of the project now, online suits it. So in terms of the issues, we had the first glut of loads of content, and that went really well and got some really great numbers. And I got some really good feedback too. And I think I've put content up as and when. So it's not kind of like batch one, batch two, batch three. It's kind of gone up every, you know, maybe a couple of weeks or every few weeks. And then with it being December, I've kind of just been either concentrating on working or drinking, so I haven't put much content up since probably the first week of December. So with the coming week and maybe the week after that, I'll start to add a few more pieces to the online website.
Yeah, and do you just want to remind people of kind of the ethos of the magazine, because it is quite unique, isn't it?
Yeah. So the ethos is essentially kind of something for everyone, which I think is really easy to say and harder to define. But I think it's kind of, you get a lot of magazines which are kind of aimed at like women or men or this age or that age. And the idea was actually like some of the things in either one of them gender magazines, the other gender will want to read. So it's not, you know, it's not just like footy for men, clothes for women, vice versa. These things intertwine and they get kind of, you know, they get muddled up in the best possible way. And there was nowhere for that. So what I kind of thought was like, I should do something with that, you know, and whether it gets to one issue or 100 issues or whatever, putting something out there that can be read for anyone. So it's not like aimed, not like a lads section and a women's section. It's just there. And if you want, if you like the idea of that article, give it a read. If you don't read it, that's fine. And it's like, it's all free. It's just online, sunshinezine.com. And yeah, it's just, I think it is quite unique. And it's got a lot of really nice feedback from a lot of really nice places. With 2017 coming, I'm hoping to kind of kick on, run a few projects through the website, and kind of get some more unique things in there, unique subjects and unique subject matters, but also some fun, like some exciting things. It's not all super serious. You know, it's TV. There's, I'm quite a big mental health advocate. It really interests me, but I don't just want it to be, this is a gender, you know, a gender neutral magazine, super serious. You know, if you want fun, don't come around here. There's going to be silly bits and there's going to be serious bits. And I think finding the balance there is going to be tough, but going to be exciting as well.
Excellent. Brilliant. Do you just want to give the website, the link, a plug again? So how can people get to it and read the stuff?
Yeah. So it's all the W's dot sunshinezine, Z-I-N-E, .com. Excellent. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing for Twitter at sunshinezine.
Fantastic. Well, I certainly recommend it. Yeah. It's a very, as you're very unique, very classy, very interesting product. And just come to you as well, Sam. This might be a slightly big question, so you know, answer it as you wish. But I'm kind of intrigued by what digital sports news editor at the Times means in terms of the relationship with the print product. Is it quite separate? Is it quite collaborative in terms of the way you work there?
Yeah, very much so. We're very intertwined. I mean, I sit on the same desk as them. Mm. You know, I'm literally, if I need to pass the sports editor a pack of biscuits, I can do that. We're that close. So. Yeah, no, we're very intertwined, and we have to be really, because you know you're dealing with this, you're dealing with the same journalists, and you don't want to sort of make extra demands on their time if they're going to be writing things for print, and you want a similar thing for the web or for the tablet. So it's sort of time management, working out what we're getting from people for the paper, what they might be able to do that's extra for us, what they might be able to send us early. Yeah, lots of juggling really, and trying to work out also what looks good, what's going to look good online, more so than it might do in print. You know, we can do things, you know, on a digital platform that print can't do. So it's about looking about, you know, what the paper's going to be doing for the next day's edition, and working out how we can show that off in a good way on the site, and also think about the phone app as well. So many people nowadays consuming news on their phones. So yeah, almost our first thought really digitally is not what does this look like on the desktop PC, it's actually what does this look like in the palm of your hand, does this actually look good? So yeah, there's lots of considerations now, but it's fun, it's just trying to get that time management is the key, and make sure that you get what you want by the end of the day, and that everybody's buying into what you're doing. So good days, tricky days. Today was a good day. So
excellent, very good. Well, let's leave it on that note. Very positive, upbeat note. Excellent. So thank you to Luke and Sam for coming on. Fantastic throughout. So yes, Liverpool play Southampton on Wednesday in the first leg of the EFL Cup semi-final. Then that huge game at Old Trafford on Sunday, Manchester United away. And yeah, let's certainly hope we can get a victory there. And we will do one of these podcasts again quite soon. Not quite sure when, but it certainly won't be a month, as was the gap between this one and the last one. It'll certainly be sooner than that. So until then, enjoy the football. And as ever, up the Reds.
Podcast Network.